Welcome to Are You Quizzing Me? I'm Vineet Nair with my co-host Aditya Kashyap. This is a quizzing trivia podcast show. Join us as we dive deep into history, science, sport, pop culture, and so much more. Let's get quizzing.
And we're back. Another day, another episode, and this is episode number 37 of Are You Quizzing Me? Me, Aditya, and I are back for another round of quizzing. And let's start off today's quizzing with your audience question. This is a question I'm asking for you, our beloved audience, and the answer for which I will give at the end of the episode. So here goes. Senior is a 2022 Netflix documentary on which indie director of the 1960s and 70s? The documentary was made by the subject's most famous son, who made his screen debut aged 5 in his father's 1970 film Pound. Identify the director. Let me repeat the question. Senior is a 2022's Netflix documentary on which indie director of the 1960s and 70s? The documentary has been made by the subject's more famous son, who made a screen debut aged 5 in his father's 1970 film Pound. I will reveal the answer at the end of the episode. Try and guess it by then. Before we start off with the regular quizzing programming, there is the small matter of Aditya's question of last week, for which we have all waited way too long. Aditya, what was your question, and what would be your brilliant answer? And I do not mean that ironically.
My question was, what would be an ideal name for a website to commemorate Shammi Kapoor's contribution to the internet world of India, the online world of India? Because he did a lot. In the initial years when the internet was just a small little thing starting off. So I thought a lot about this, and this is going to be a long-winded answer, so strap in. Because do you know Shammi Kapoor won a Filmfare Award for Best Actor? Do you know which film he won that for?
I should say I'm woefully ignorant of his career.
Perfect, because I did not expect you to. He won it for the movie Brahmachari.
Okay.
Now, Char, of course, is 4. And Lord Brahma is also has a lot of 4 imagery. He has 4 heads. He also was the author of the 4 Vedas. And the 4 heads point in 4 different directions, which would ideally make the shape of a square. So, the ideal name for a website to commemorate Shammi Kapoor would be obviously 4square.com.
Okay. Either I'm having a kidney stone or this has literally caused internal bleeding.
I spent a solid half an hour thinking about what are the different puns I can make. His famous movies include Teesri Manzil. I was thinking like something about eBay, 3Bay. But I mean, when I finally arrived on Brahmachari and the connection to Foursquare, I was quite proud of myself, Vineet, I must tell you.
Yes, proud is definitely the word. Okay, Aditya, let's start off the regular quizzing, the more sane quizzing, I should say, for this week's episode. And I invite you to ask the first question. So, have at it.
All right, so this question assumes, or rather, I hope that you are a Pokemon fan. Are you a Pokemon fan, Vineet?
Absolutely not.
Oh boy. Okay. So this combines...
this is going to be painful for me.
hopefully not. This combines the love for Pokemon with the love for etymology. Now let's start off very simply. Do you know where the word Pokemon comes from?
Pocket monsters, right?
Hey, Vineet might not be a fan, but that does not mean Vineet is stupid. I love it. Yes, it does come from pocket monsters. Pokemon does stand for pocket monsters. The initial set of Pokemon that came in the first generation all had very interesting etymologies, but I'm going to focus on just a few of them. Do you know what the Pokemon's Ekans and Arbok get their name from?
Are you speaking another language? That's my first question. Okay, how do you spell these?
Ekans and Arbok are E-K-A-N-S and Arbok is A-R-B-O-K.
Oh, wait, these are backwards. No? So there'll be Snake and Cobra.
Hey, well cracked. Yes, this is Snake and Cobra spelled backwards. All right, you got that one pretty quickly. Let's ask you another two. And these are Hitmonlee and Hitmonchan.
Okay, how, slowly. Pretend I'm four.
Okay. Hitmonlee, Hitmonchan.
Hitmonlee.
Monlee.
Monlee, okay. And Hitmonchan. Something to do with Jackie Chan and Hit Me or something like that. Who am I? I have no clue. Just
close enough, close enough, close enough. Hitmonchan is an homage to Jackie Chan, and Hitmonlee is an homage to Bruce Lee. So these Pokemon who used to fight, like actually fight with their hands and their feet. And let me ask you one last one. There is a water Pokemon, and because all Pokemon have specialities, this one's specialty is water. There's a water Pokemon whose name is Lapras. Do you know where Lapras gets its name from?
How do you spell that?
L-A-P-R-A-S.
Nope. Nothing springs to mind.
Do you know... This one is a tough one, so it's all right. I'll give it to you. Do you know the famous mathematician Laplace? I'm not sure how to pronounce it.
Laplace, yes.
Yeah.
Yes,
I had heard of Laplace. Him. Yeah, he studied the sea and the tides and was obsessed with the mathematics and the physics behind it. So that's where the name, as an homage to his obsession with the water bodies, that's where Laplace gets its name from.
Okay.
Yep. I'm going to do one more.
Okay.
Do you know the most famous Pokemon?
I think you basically just took the question out of my mouth. I was about to ask you, can you tell me where Pikachu came from? Because I had no clue. I was like, okay, everything you said so far makes sense. The only exposure I've had to Pokemon is like, the Ryan Reynolds voiced Pikachu, Detective Pikachu flick, which was pretty cute. Yeah, so I was wondering, okay, Pikachu, where does Pikachu come from? I was about to ask you, hoping that you would know. But I'm guessing this is what you wanted to ask me now.
Absolutely, that's where I was getting at. So the Pika is an actual rodent that exists in real life. But Pikachu's name is actually more of a wordplay than it is an homage to Pika. Because Pikachu and a lot of the Pokemon, when they speak, they only say their own name, technically, or a part of it. So Pikachu says Pika Pika a lot. And Pika Pika is a Japanese onomatopoeia for sparkle. Choo Choo in Japanese represents a squeaking sound. So Pikachu is a squeaky, sparkly mouse. And that's kind of what the Pokemon is all about, because it also has like powers of lightning and stuff like that, and looks like a mouse. So yeah, it's a squeaky, sparkly mouse. That's where Pikachu comes from.
A very cute one voiced by Ryan Reynolds in that movie, which again, I have to say, it was pretty good.
Indeed. Yeah.
Okay. That was a very good set of questions. I'm going to move from there to an intersection of mythology and modern medicine. So according to a paper released in 2014, which person from mythology may have had an AIP mutation? That is a mutation on the AIP gene, which caused early onset autosomal dominant pituitary gigantism with a possible pituitary tumor pressing on his optic chiasma, which would somewhat explain his eventual fate. So which mythological character or person with mythological, which person from mythology would I be talking about? Also, to be fair, when I say mythology, many people across the world do believe that this person actually existed. So I don't want to offend anybody. Let's say this person from myth/history.
Did you mention gigantism at some point?
Yes.
Not a clue right now. Could you guide me towards which mythology/history are we looking at? Indian?
No, I would advise you, this is practically a giveaway, but I would advise you to look towards the Judeo-Christian mythology, or at least their religious stories. Some even would call it histories.
I was going to ask, if not Indian, then Greek, but you're taking me to a different space altogether. I cannot think of a lot of characters which would qualify as having gigantism in these tales. And what is the eventual fate that you mentioned? Like, what explains their eventual fate?
Okay, let me repeat that part again. That's a good clue. Okay, so according to a 2014 paper which did an analysis, this person may have suffered from a mutation on the AIPG, which should have caused an autosomal dominant pituitary gigantism, along with a possible pituitary tumor pressing on his optic chiasma. Now, what this could have done is could have limited his lateral vision. So he may not have seen something coming at him. Something small, something fast moving.
Oh, okay. Interesting. So David and Goliath?
Yes, so this is the... this is suspected. This is one of the possible scientific explanations for Goliath and his eventual fate.
That's fascinating. I love it. Goliath might have not been able to see what is coming at him.
Yeah, so the Goliath obviously was a giant. Is the most well-known giant in the Bible. There are other giants in the Bible. So he's the most well-known giant in the Bible. And he's described as a champion out of the camp of the Philistines, whose height was 6 cubits and a span, which is roughly around 9 feet tall.
Got it.
So the story goes that twice a day for 40 days, morning and evening, Goliath, champion of the Philistines, comes out between the lines and challenged the Israelites to send out a champion of their own to decide the outcome in single combat. Much like you would have seen in, Troy.
Mm.
However, the Israeli king Saul is afraid. One day, David accepts the challenge. Saul reluctantly agrees and offers his armor, which David declines, taking only his staff, sling, and 5 smooth stones from a brook. David hurls a stone from his sling and hits Goliath in the center of his forehead. Goliath falls on his face to the ground, and David cuts off his head. Now, there's also a school of thought that he may not actually have died from the stone hitting his forehead. It might have just been a concussion, and that it was the actual beheading which might have killed him.
Fascinating piece of trivia, I must say. Okay. Speaking of fighting back, segue into my question.
Okay.
Let's go to the 1900s. And this is a gentleman, 19th century. This is a gentleman, American gentleman called Almon Brown Strowger. Strowger, I'm not sure, but something like that. He is somebody who received a patent for an invention in 1891. This invention was for a very specific reason. Strowger used to have an undertaking business, but was losing clients to a competitor whose wife used to redirect all the calls that would come in inquiring about any undertaking business that was in the city, and would, instead of letting it go to Strowger, who they might have been inquiring about, would instead redirect them to her husband. And hence, Strowger was losing his business. What did Strowger invent?
So let me just recap the question. So Strowger was an undertaker, right?
Yeah.
And he was losing business because his competitor's wife was redirecting calls to her husband's business, place of business, right? Okay. So what did he invent that he got a patent for? In what year did you say?
1891.
He got a patent for it in 1891?
Yeah.
Has this something to do with the telephone exchange?
That was a very quick and brilliant crack. Yes, it is. He invented the first automatic telephone exchange in 1889, and he received a patent for it in 1891. And the reason was because he did not want to lose business. So he invented something. And I'm just trying to think of somebody who works with, you know, the deceased and the grieving process, and suddenly he's like, you know what? All of this is great, but I need to fix this business problem first. I'm going to go invent an automatic telephone exchange. I just love that. I love that this human being was so annoyed that he invented a whole new thing. Genius.
Okay. So let's go from the turn of the early 20th century to the late 20th century. Okay. In 1998, a woman is rumored to have posted a warning to censor themselves in case British school kids were lurking, due to which the abbreviation NFBSK, that is Not for British School Kids, came to use. It later evolved into a simpler and more commonly used abbreviation today. The acronym assumes that we all have a job, and are forbidden to do certain things. This abbreviation serves as a warning that you can find yourself having an awkward conversation with your boss if you were, doing certain things. Dan Savage, an author, invented a more appropriate acronym, adding one letter to the original one, saying, "I have to search for these things constantly because that's my job. So I need you to tell me what the original acronym was," which I'm 155% sure that you already know, "and the new one suggested by Dan Savage."
I'm assuming the original one is not safe for work, NSFW?
Yes, the original one is NSFW. Dan Savage invented a more appropriate acronym by adding one letter to the original. So what's the new one suggested by Dan?
And what does Dan Savage do?
He was an author, and basically he said that, I have to search for these things constantly as that is my job.
So he has to search for NSFW stuff for his job.
As part of his job as a writer and an author and things like that. So he's like that. So because of that, he felt like NSFW wasn't particularly very accurate. So he changed it slightly.
Not safe for corporate work, NSFCW?
No. Let me just, I gave you part of his quote. Let me see if I can give you a little more of it. So there's a blanked out portion, obviously, so I'm just telling you that in advance. So he invented a more appropriate acronym, adding one letter to the original one, saying, "I have to search for these things constantly as that is my job." It's blank, a big blank, not mine. Let me just give you an additional clue that the expansion of the new acronym would be the blank.
Got it. It's okay. So the expansion of the blank would be something like it's not safe for office work. Not mine.
Close.
Not safe for regular work. I don't know. I can't think of anything. Is there only one additional word in the...
Only one additional letter and one additional word corresponding to that letter.
Okay. Well, eventually, if I don't get it, just give me the letter and I'll try to guess the word. But is it a not safe for dash work?
Yes.
Okay. I can't think of anything except like normal, regular, office.
It's much simpler than all of that.
Not safe for your work?
Yes, it is NSFYW, not safe for your work. So his original thing was, "I have to search for these things constantly as that's my job." So it's not safe for your work, not mine.
Okay, that's funny. All right, fun. Speaking of NSFW stuff, such a terrible segue. But do you know which are the most common birthdays? And I could only find this in the context of the United States. So what are the most common birthdays in the United States? And obviously, why were they the most common birthdays? So, take a guess.
How much of a leeway do I have? Do I have to give exact dates, or can it be like plus or minus a week or something like that?
I have the top 10 in front of me, so... Go ahead. If you hit any one of them, I'll consider it a win.
Okay. So let's see. April 4th.
April 4th.
Would it be March 4th?
Are you March going 4th. From
9 months.
4th of July?
Yes.
Okay. No. There is no April in the top 10.
Okay. What about November? November 14th.
Not a single November.
Okay, then my logic on this is obviously wrong. You'll have to give me a clue.
So, don't think specific dates. Think more range of dates.
Okay, so the range of dates... So, it's so obviously, because you've already rejected April, it's not the 4th of July weekend. I mean, like, holidays... What kind of holidays would make Americans want to procreate? That is the question.
Think about it. Procreation, or the act of procreation, is usually NSFW, which means you can't do it when you are W. So,
that's why I'm thinking of holidays. So, how much? I'm not very familiar with how many holidays these guys get. So, Thanksgiving is in November. So,
you're making it too complicated, Vineet. You're making it too complicated. Just... It's the most, okay. It's perhaps New the most
Year's,
obvious
New
answer.
Year's. So New Year's then, September.
September, I'll give it to you. Yes, September. The Christmas holidays are actually
Christmas
more
holidays and New Year's, okay.
Yeah, so Christmas okay. season, which leads us to like a September, the most popular birthday is September 9th. And then in the top 10, there are like 9 September birthdays. There's 9th, there's 19th, there's 12th, 17th, 10th September, 20th September, 15th September, 16th September, 18th September.
Really?
September is a very busy month. Yeah. Even though the variance is very small, it's not like it's a huge rise, but it is definitely the highest out of all.
Yeah, I mean, like definitely statistically, it would be an outlier. No, so basically what we should take away from this is that Americans are especially horny during Christmas.
Well, they're not working, so... Speaking of, a small segue, but very related, least popular birthday?
Oh, least popular birthday. September 11th?
Interesting choice, but no.
Okay. Least popular or least common birthday you're talking about?
I mean, popular is like not like it's a popularity contest. Like, but this sucks.
September 11th.
Yeah, that is true. That would be a terrible day, I guess. To share with a very big tragedy in the American history. But no, I'm talking about least common birthdays.
Okay, least common birthdays. I do not know. I have no clue. Least common birthdays would be... that would be practically anything where they have to work, right? And they would have to work more.
Interestingly, no. So it's a day where people don't want to work. The least popular birthday, least common birthday is December 25th. It is Christmas Day.
Oh.
Do you know the second one?
January 1st?
January 1st. Okay. The third one?
February 14th.
No, it's December 24th. It's Christmas Eve.
Christmas Eve. Okay.
Do you want to take a guess on the fourth one?
Boxing Day?
It's July 4th.
July 4th. Okay.
4th of July.
No, but I would think that February 14th would actually put more pressure. I mean, like, you have to take somebody out and it's their birthday. That's like immense pressure.
But the logic behind this is apparently, as labor goes and as pregnancies goes, there's not so much you can control as to when the baby is going to come out. But for the scenarios where you can, where perhaps it is an induced labor or it is a C-section or all these different kinds of methods apart from the regular method. Those methods, doctors and nurses would prefer to do it on a day when they're not, expected to be at home with family. So December 25th, January 1st, December 24th, July 4th, all these days thus become fewer birthdays than other days of the year.
Okay. Okay. Nice. Okay. So I am going to go in a completely different direction. Let's move away from birthdays and whatnot. I'm going to talk about one particular person, okay? And I'm not going to mention his last, middle, or last name. I'm just going to mention his first name. His first name was Emery. Emery was born in Chicago, Illinois, on December 27th, 1958. He learned to play chess as a child, served in the United States Air Force as a sergeant, where he excelled as a linguist. He learned Spanish through being an exchange student in Mexico. Later became an American chess international master, described by Grandmaster Morris Ashley as a trailblazer for African-American chess. Who is his eldest son who bears his father's name?
Emery was born in 1958.
Yes. Chicago, Illinois, on December 27th, 1958. Learned to play chess as a child, served in the United States Air Force, became a American chess international master, and was described by Grandmaster Maurice Ashley as a trailblazer for African-American chess. Who is his eldest son who bears his father's name?
Okay, so first clarification, this is an actual person, not a fictional person?
This is an actual person, very much an actual person.
Now, I'm trying to think of it, because you said African-American chess, I'm assuming he's also African-American himself. 1958, so his son would be at least around 20 years later, 80s, 70s, 80s. Is his son also famous for chess?
No. His son is famous for another sport where he was a champion and a professional sportsman. But that's not what he's primarily famous for today.
Okay, so not Tiger Woods.
No, not Tiger Woods. Good guess.
Tiger Woods would be older also. Tiger Woods would not be in the 80s. Yeah.
Yeah. This particular gentleman is, I think, around 36, 37, maybe, somewhere around that age.
No, I can't think of anybody. Emery.
Let me just put it this way. There's a very specific reason why I did not mention the father's last or middle name.
I'm assuming because the son bears the name, right?
Yeah, the son bears the name.
And that would be a famous enough name.
Let me just put it this way. The son's name is also Emery.
30 years old. Emery. Oh, no, I have no clue. You have to give me some context to the son or the father.
Okay, so the son is partially American, partially British, just like old Winston. He's a media personality, businessman, and former professional kickboxer. He's also appeared on Big Brother, the UK version of the Big Brother.
No idea whatsoever. None of these strike a bell at all.
Okay, I'm going to give you a little more clarification. He's quite famous for his misogynistic commentary nowadays.
Oh, what's his name? The bald dude? No, wait, he's not
yes,
black.
Yes, the bald dude. Yes, exactly, the bald dude.
But that dude is not black. What's his name? Oh my God, I'm totally blanking on his name. But he's a white guy.
No, he's actually half, he's mixed race. His father was African American and his mother was not. You already know who the moment you said bald dude, I know you know who he is. So he's Andrew Tate. Andrew Tate's actual name is Emery Andrew Tate III. His father was Emery Andrew Tate II.
Interesting. And, wait, oh wow, he's mixed race. That just makes him that much more interesting as a human being.
Yeah. Wow. And his father was a chess international master.
Wow, okay. That's some legacy to try to live up to, and he has chosen to do it in a very interesting way.
Interesting being a very interesting choice of word.
I've read some of his comments, and there is garden variety misogyny, and then there is this just like misogyny on some kind of hallucinogenic drugs or something. I don't know. It's just, how are you getting so creative with misogyny? It really boggles my mind. Quite amazing.
Okay, your turn.
There was a lot of atomic bomb testing. Anybody who's watched Oppenheimer would be aware, or in general, there was a lot of atomic bomb testing happening across the world. During that phase, Russia was developing its arsenal. The US obviously was doing that as well. Where in the world of arts and entertainment did it have an unexpected repercussion? Especially in the space of security. So I'm going to phrase it.
Okay. So I have a couple of answers for this. First of all, maybe this is a fun fact. Maybe you know this, maybe you don't. But you cannot fake old wines anymore, because wines which were bottled pre-1945, which were corked pre-1945 have never opened, will not have any of the radioactive compounds that are created from atomic blasts. So if you can't fake it anymore, because you cannot have a wine bottle or wine, anything without those trace compounds present anymore. Anything corked post 1945 will have those compounds. Similarly, I'm guessing there's some kind of trace radioactive element which would be present in paintings post that were actually painted post. So forgeries and all painted post 1945 would have those trace radioactive elements which can be detected. So you can basically say that this is pre and this is post 1945.
I just am constantly amazed at you, Vineet. You are
thank you.
The bright spot in my week, which reminds me just how glorious the human race is. Okay, so to sum it up, actually, you did a brilliant job of it. But just to sum it up, Atoms of a single element but of different masses are known as isotopes. Carbon 12 and carbon 13 isotopes are stable, while carbon 14 is unstable. Now, carbon 14 was present in very, very trace amounts pre the testing of nuclear bombs. Post those testings, post having all of those bombs being exploded across the world, the amount of carbon 14 in the atmosphere increased significantly, which also meant that it went into a lot of other things, including plants and trees. Now, anything derived from that, which includes paints and canvases, now has carbon 14 in it. Pre-1940s, 1950s produced art would not have that. You're actually quite right about the wine thing as well. However, I will tell you this, and I'm quoting this from a New York Times article. It is, quote unquote, not a silver bullet. Radiocarbon dating, firstly, because radiocarbon dating is by definition destructive. So they do need to extract small parts, even if it is very small, minuscule parts, they do need to extract that. And the other reason it is also not very effective, or at least will stop being as effective, is because the carbon-14 levels in the atmosphere are on course to return to pre-bombing levels after being absorbed by the ocean, and are in fact expected to fall further as they continue to be diluted by fossil fuel emissions.
Oh.
So, yeah, the carbon-14 method, while it was effective for a while, and it might be effective for a short while more, it will soon become ineffective as well. But it is an interesting piece of trivia that has originated from the use of atomic bombs, and well cracked, very well cracked.
Thank you. Okay, let's move to music. This song has given the artist their first Brit Award, which is the equivalent of a Grammy in the UK. It's been used in a few television series. The cover of the this particular song by the band Placebo was used in the season 2 episode of Bones called Judas on a Pole. More recently, it was used on a very famous TV series to represent the emotional struggles of a character. The song's original name had to be changed because it had something in its title, which might have made it difficult to be played in certain religious countries. The artist thought that this idea of changing the title seemed ridiculous, as it was a big part of the song's identity and lyrics. Identify the song.
Is this the same song that was used in Bones?
Yes. So that's my first clue. This version, the original artist version, was not used. What was used was a cover by Placebo. If you've ever watched Bones, there are these episodes where we get introduced to Temperance Brennan's famous father, criminal father, and where he takes out, people who are trying to harm his family. So I think if I remember correctly, this particular sequence plays in the background when he's killed somebody on a cross and burning them alive.
Ooh, wow. Okay, I've not watched Bones at all, but that description just made me wanna. So that sounds like an interesting show. I have not watched it, so that doesn't quite help me. But okay. Let's see, what other clues are there? You said something about changing the lyrics would change the...
So the song's original name had to be changed because it had something in its title, which would have made it difficult to be played in certain religious countries. The artist themselves thought that this idea of changing the title seemed ridiculous, as it was a big part of the song's identity and lyrics.
Religious countries. So does it have anything to do with the mention of God, Jesus?
Yes. You're right the first time. Your first guess was right. Let me just put it this way. It has come to prominence again because of its use in a more recent TV series. More recent, very successful TV series where it was used to represent the emotional struggles of a character and was played during a very emotionally charged and action-packed and tense moment during the end of the season.
So I'm quite lost right now. I would maybe ask for a clue. Which TV series was this?
Oh, if I give you that, it's easy to crack. So let's just say Netflix and leave it at that.
A lot of the Netflix programming recently has been non-English.
Yes, but this is an English song. This particular series is one of Netflix's premier lineup. And the song basically climbed the charts again after decades of its release because of this particular TV series and the use of the song.
Stranger Things, the song that is played on the earphones, on the headphones.
Yes. So what's the song?
I love that song, actually. After Stranger Things, I also was obsessively listening to it. Oh, man, it's been a while since I've heard it, though. God, God, something. Yes, I know it. Oh, boy. It's a female singer, right?
Yes, it's a female singer. I'll give it to you. You obviously know the song.
Yeah.
The artist is Kate Bush.
Yes.
And the song is Running Up That Hill, original title being A Deal with God.
Oh, okay. Yes, because in Stranger Things, it goes by Running Up That Hill. Right.
There's a line in that, if you were to make a deal with God.
Yes. No, that's what I was thinking of. There is a line, definitely, but I couldn't place it because it wasn't in the name that I listened to it on Spotify. It says Running Up That Hill. Interesting. Okay.
So
apparently, Kate Bush owns the rights for this song.
Yes, she does. She doesn't like any record. She doesn't like giving it to, just to be used anywhere and anywhere willy-nilly. Which is why I guess that Bones used a cover of the song rather than the original song itself.
Interesting. But also, interestingly, all of the money that the song has made recently by climbing up the charts and whatnot has gone entirely to Kate Bush, which is unheard of in the music industry because the record labels end up keeping a big chunk. She never sold the song. So she just earned like millions of dollars overnight simply because the song went viral again.
So that brings us to the end of today's episode. We have the question that Aditya has to ask us and for which we will wait a week to know the answer. So Aditya, what is your question for this week?
I'll ask a question based off of Pokemon. Pokemon obviously paid homage to Hitmonchan and Hitmonlee. So what Pokemon characters... In my head, let me clarify, not actually, but in my head, pay homage to Indian film legends. And that is an answer you'll find out next week.
Okay, and we shall wait for that answer. Now, before we wind up today, there's the audience question that I asked at the beginning of the episode. So let me repeat the question. Senior is a 2022 Netflix documentary on which indie director of the 1960s and 70s? Documentary was made by the subject's more famous son, who made a screen debut aged 5 in his father's 1970 film Pound. Aditya, do you have any guesses as to who the director is?
So when you first said the question, you said indie, and I misheard it as Indian, and I had no clue. I was like, what Indian film director is famous and whose son? And then I just heard indie, and now I think I know the answer. It is Robert Downey Sr.
Yes. So it's Robert Downey Sr. And his obviously more famous son is Robert Downey Jr., who debuted at the age of 5 in his father's 1970 film Pound. Also, Sr. was apparently the person who introduced his son to intoxicants at a very young age as part of his growing up. So, yeah. So that was the answer to the audience question. And that's the end of today's episode. Thank you for listening in. We hope you enjoyed the show and learned something new. If you liked what you heard, please consider subscribing to our podcast and leaving us a review on wherever you're listening to podcasts. It helps us reach a wider audience and allows more people to discover and enjoy the show. If you're listening on Spotify, just scroll down the screen and you'll see a question where you can share feedback on this episode. We would also love to hear from you, feedback, suggestions, even trivia. You can reach us on Instagram at @RUQuizzingMe. We appreciate your support and look forward to sharing more episodes with you in the future. Aditya will be back after the musical sting for the fact check. Thanks again for tuning and have a great day.
See you guys next week. And here's a very quick fact check for the episode. Tiger Woods was born on 30th December 1975. And that's pretty much all for this fact check.